Good morning. At this time, we take you to the far corners of the world where you will hear the latest war news from our on-the-scene correspondents. But first, here are the latest dispatches from the Southwest Pacific. United States and Netherlands naval and air forces have defeated a Japanese invasion fleet in the Java Sea in the first direct attack on Java and sent it fleeing northward in retreat. The United Nations forces struck with all their power at the Japanese fleet, which numbered several tens of ships, one of the largest of the Japanese have ever used. Extent of damage to the enemy fleet was not immediately known, but it is indicated that the first attempt by Japan to invade this rich, densely peopled island, heart of the Netherland Indies, and the outpost of the United Nations had been definitely defeated. Also, it was indicated that the United States flying fortresses and dive bombers, which took part with such success in the Battle of Bali, were used in the engagement between the United Nations and Japanese forces. A communique admitted that there have been hits on Allied as well as Japanese warships, but again, it said that no details could be given. The Japanese invasion fleet, for which Allied warships and reconnaissance planes had been watching for days, was sighted yesterday afternoon. Allied ships and planes raced into action and engaged the enemy. Fighting continued fiercely until after dark. As the Japanese invasion fleet was beaten back, Japanese air fleets renewed with great ferocity their raids on key points in Java, apparently to cover the landing of invasion forces, which the Japanese high command had believed already on the island. At least five enemy bombing planes were shot down by the Allied defense planes and the blazing Dutch guns, whose crews had been standing by for the crisis hour. The Japanese planes rained bombs on the harbor and an airport in the Batavia area of western Java, and one of them crashed and another was damaged. Four more big bombing planes crashed in a second raid. Japanese plane fleets attacked the naval base of Surabaya at the eastern end of Java time and again, only to be driven back by the deadly fire of the Dutch guns. The Netherland Indies communique said that Dutch forces still holding out in a gallant fight in Celebes had not only killed many Japanese in repulsing an attack by vastly superior enemy forces, but had launched a counterattack in another area. In Sumatra and Timor also, Dutch forces inflicted losses on the Japanese hordes by their skillful and daring guerrilla attacks. It is indicated here that the Japanese have met a real setback in their first direct attack on Java. British Imperial forces today are reported still clinging grimly to their positions along the Sitang River, last natural defense line protecting Rangoon in the face of an expected major Jap offensive. Meanwhile, reports from New Delhi, India, reveal that the Japanese have brought the war to Indian territory with raids on the Andaman Islands in the Bay of Bengal. The Japanese aircraft attacked Port Blair, 375 miles southwest of Rangoon, which occupies an important strategic position in the sea lanes of the Bay of Bengal. The attack aroused keen speculation as to whether the Japanese will attempt occupation of the Andaman Islands. And now across the continent to our newsroom in New York.
This is New York, and now here's news from Moscow. The Red Army is relentlessly closing that steel ring on the Nazis at Staraya Russa and may be shutting another trap around vital Smolensk. Units of the encircled German 16th Army near Staraya Russa are said to be giving way in panic. Throughout the frozen woods and swamps around the town, the Reds are hunting them down and wiping them out. In the Smolensk sector, Red troops have pushed forward 75 miles in 10 days and annihilated 4,200 Germans. Prongs of a pincer movement have been closing on the city for some time, but this is the first report in days on the extent of Russian progress. In the south, the Soviets claim to have shattered three German divisions and to have launched new attacks in the Crimea. Berlin admits new Red drives are underway in the Crimea, but as usual, the Nazis say they're being repulsed. In Libya, both Axis and British patrols are roving the desert despite terrific sandstorms. Italy is having her troubles with black market operators. Fascist authorities are said to have shut 22 clothing and shoe stores in Rome because of illicit sales. Some 55 persons have been sentenced to prison or fined elsewhere for similar law violations. In one city, seven persons are said to have sold illegally some $40,000 worth of leather. Others have been punished for violating laws on meat and rice. Now, a dispatch from New York. The submarine toll of ships in Atlantic coastal waters reached 41 today. The new total includes the latest two American tankers that the Navy says have been sunk by the U-boats. Now, these are the Standard Oil tanker, R.P. Resor, off New Jersey, and the Atlantic Refining Company's W.D. Anderson, off Florida. At the same time, there's news of a huge British merchantman lost to a sub in the North Atlantic and of the torpedoing of the British freighter Scottish Star in the Caribbean. 112 lives were lost in the British sinkings, and 73 are believed lost in the Resor and Anderson sinkings. We had planned to contact London as usual this morning. However, I'm monitoring London. We may or may not, as the case may be. If the signal comes through, we will go to our correspondent there. I understand that London is not ready for us, so we're going to go to our newsroom in the nation's capital for a report by Claude Mahoney, speaking from the newsroom in Washington.
Good morning. The Congressional Committee investigating the Office of Civilian Defense has run smack up against a man who has a mind of his own and who so far hasn't shown any idea that he means to change that mind. That man, of course, is Dean Landis, the former head of the Harvard Law School, who's been put in charge of the OCD and who says he's going to reorganize parts of it. The members of the committee insist on a complete reshuffling of the workers in the OCD, with some of the folks now attached there to be out the window when the shuffle is done. So far, Landis has just gone through those eerie facial contortions of his up there before the committee, but he hasn't promised to clean the OCD house as thoroughly as the committee wants him to. He shows no disposition to get rid of Melvin Douglas, for instance, the movie star, whom the congressmen frankly don't like. But he explained yesterday that Douglas would not be paid except for subsistence while he was working. But the committee dug out the fact that Douglas could be paid airplane fare, something like $264.12, for a round trip between his California home and Washington. And the committee doesn't like that. It also doesn't like what Senator McKellar calls frills and furbelows, some of the morale-building activities that Landis plans to include and which the committee wants him to throw out in favor of gas masks and things like that that they consider more essential. Senator McKellar summed up his dissatisfaction yesterday in one lovely sentence when he told Dean Landis, "Your explanation is just a lot of words. And members of Congress should know about words, all right, for Congress is probably the greatest word factory in the country." And Martin Dyes, the fiery chairman of the Committee on Un-American Activities, has asked Uncle Sam to halt what he calls the Japanese Trojan horse in America. It's a Trojan horse, he intimates, that's on a runaway spree all up and down the West Coast, especially. And he recommends removal from the coast at once of all Japanese and anybody else who may be a suspected individual. He wants the present methods of investigation tightened, new teeth in the laws, and the removal of all persons from their posts in the government if they have ever held a membership in any subversive organization. But right along that line, there's a question about where to put these Japs if they're moved. That's the big question, and San Francisco's worried about it now. And so worried are other people in other states, because they say San Francisco and the rest of California may not want these Japs, but we don't either. Dyes has published a 285-page yellow book on the subject, and he promises a 500-page black paper pretty soon that will give information on fascist espionage and sabotage. Now, it looks like an old-fashioned barnyard fight between the farm bloc in Congress and President Roosevelt over the business of putting a rider on an appropriation bill. The bill has been held up, you know, because Senator Thomas of Oklahoma has threatened to stick on a rider, saying that the money may not be used to buy government-held stocks of goods at prices below that much-discussed base known as parity. Mr. Roosevelt came out into the open yesterday and called the rider idea reprehensible practice, which is strong language of which the president is a master. But back on the Hill, the members of the farm bloc didn't take that little spanking very seriously. Senator Bankhead of Alabama even said why he didn't know anything about any rider. He said there was some talk of a limitation on an appropriation bill, but a rider by any other euphemistic name will still be a rider to President Roosevelt. And people who keep close to the European scene believe that the fate of our relations with the French now is strictly up to the Vichy government. Sumner Welles, the acting Secretary of State, was pretty plain in his statement to the French yesterday regarding aid to the Axis. France has promised to remain neutral, but the United States has warned that any aid given to Hitler will put the French government right on the Axis side of the fence as far as we are concerned. And that's all from Washington at this time.
Back here in New York, ladies and gentlemen, we have news from the Atlantic Theater. The British land, sea, and air forces have made a full-scale raid on the north coast of France. Parachute troops were used in the attack. Now, the bare outline of the story has been told in a communique issued jointly by the Admiralty, the War Office, and the Air Ministry. The objective, it seems, was an important radio location post, and the communique describes the attack as successful. The parachute troops, part of a specially trained airborne division, were landed in France by RAF bombers. Meanwhile, infantry forces were landed along the coast from warships, and they moved up to support the paratroops in the cleanup stages of the assault. The British communique goes on to say that the task was finished according to schedule. The parachute troops now are being returned to England by the Royal Navy. Well, now, this is the second time that Britain has used paratroops in the war. Once before, a handful of men were dropped over southern Italy to raid communications. It's understood the mysterious commandos, those black-garbed figures who have made sensational raids on France and Norway, were used as the parachutists. And they apparently dropped from the skies at dawn. And it's believed the German occupation forces were caught completely by surprise. The Nazis have not yet admitted the attack. The only word from Berlin has been a routine report of RAF raids on German coastal areas. Now, the news has thrilled the British as few things in this war have. As the word of the daring assault was flashed throughout the world, everybody asked, is this a rehearsal for an invasion to come? Here's a bulletin just handed me here in the newsroom. The German High Command admits today that British parachute troops overcame weak coastal defenses on the northwest coast of France last night and said they withdrew by sea 2 hours later. Well, that certainly is a timely bulletin. Over in the Far East from Canberra comes word that the whole northern territory of Australia has been put under military rule. Now, the proclamation was made today by Army Minister Francis Ford. It extends the military rule that previously applied only to the extreme northern area centering on the naval port of Darwin. And from London, a British news, it's a dispatch from Reuters, routed through Bandung, calls the Java Sea Battle the biggest naval engagement of the war in the Pacific so far. The engagement lasted through most of yesterday and still is being waged today. You heard about that from our newsroom in San Francisco. And from Dallas, Texas, comes word that oil men are urged to make careful plans to meet problems in the wartime oil industry. The director of production in the Petroleum Coordinator's office, Don R. Knowlton, made the appeal. And speaking at the closing meeting of the Southwestern District of the American Petroleum Institute last night, Director Knowlton urged that drillers plan to meet their problem of bringing in new wells with fewer materials. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the news up to the minute. These have been reports from our newsroom in San Francisco and in Washington and from New York. For the latest news, keep tuned to this station.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.